You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up tonight after 7, it's Ken Rudin's Political Junkie. Ken and his guests look at the latest in politics and share some lessons from American political history. That's tonight after 7 on the Ideas Network.
Now, when the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, became law in the United States, it became one of President Obama's signature initiatives. The ACA was controversial, to say the least, among GOP lawmakers who worked for the last 7 years to have the law repealed.
With President Trump in office, the Republicans unveiled their replacement for Obamacare, the American Health Care Act. But once the bill came up for a vote, the GOP couldn't gather enough support among its own party and pulled the bill.
The Affordable Care Act is still the law of the land, but what's the future for health care in the United States? Tom Oliver joins us now to talk about that. He's a professor of population health sciences at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Tom, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much, Rob.
Well, what went wrong as you see it with the American Health Care Act? It's a complicated act to try to replace a complicated law. What happened?
Well, I think we've had a couple weeks of a wild ride in both policy and politics. I think on the policy side, that is changing the healthcare system, there was a bit of a, oh my gosh, and then never mind. So right now, we have not made any changes at the federal level, and it's hard to say exactly what might be changed in the near future. On the politics side, I think it's just getting started, because the effort to try to get a repeal and replacement of the Affordable Care Act that the Republicans had, as you said, promised for years, has really stirred up the hornet's nest of politics, both within the Republican Party, but it's also emboldened Democrats and independents across the country and in the halls of Congress as well. So it's a really complex picture, and nothing that's going to go away now, because it, of course, affects the rest of President Trump's agenda with the Republican majorities in Congress. Just maybe a quick outline of some of the key things that happened in that Affordable the American Health Care Act. Well, first of all, it wasn't put forward by President Trump. It was developed mainly by House Speaker Paul Ryan, right here from Wisconsin, and Trump's Secretary for Health and Human Services, Tom Price, who's a physician by training. It really, effect was not a health care reform bill in a lot of ways. It was a tax cut bill that masqueraded as a repeal or replacement of the Affordable Care Act. What it did was it cut a number of taxes and fees on upper-income Americans, on the health insurance industry, and on medical device manufacturers that were the main way to pay for the expanded coverage of the Affordable Care Act, which provided an expansion of over 20 million Americans getting coverage over the last few years. It also changed the way that subsidies would be given out for premium assistance. Younger and higher income people would do better, while older and lower income people would be worse off, often to the tune of thousands of dollars per person. It also resulted in insurance companies, if it had become law, they would have been able to charge older beneficiaries up to 5 times the lowest premium, whereas the Affordable Care Act restricts that to 3 times the lowest rates. And then finally, it really cut back a major expansion of Medicaid that has been responsible for over 11 million Americans getting coverage. And there, of course, are many states, including Wisconsin, which still could come on board and take advantage of federal funding supporting the expansion of Medicaid. So the bottom line was that the Congressional Budget Office, which is the official nonpartisan scorekeeper, came out and said within 3 years, 24 million Americans, by their estimate, would lose insurance coverage, more than had gained coverage under the Affordable Care Act. And while it would save the federal government over $300 billion over 10 years, that amounts to about 1% of our national health spending. So just about every organization representing health care providers professionals, hospitals and the American Medical Association and the nurses and just about anybody else who actually has to care for people, they strongly oppose this. And it also conflicted directly with President Trump's proclamations, both during the election and since, that everybody will be covered and health care will be much cheaper. So so that's sort of a good start for what happened, and then why things started going wrong is another discussion.
Talking to Tom Oliver from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at healthcare policy in the United States. Tom, let's look at what's next. Right now, Obamacare is still the law of the land. Assuming nothing happens, at least for the next little while, we don't come up with another plan that makes it through Congress, what is next for Obamacare?
Well, we shouldn't assume there will be nothing because, in fact, a few days after the bill was pulled, so that essentially Republicans refused to go on the record about the American Health Care Act, it was revived, at least in the idea of it coming back and being subject to further negotiation between the president and some of the opponents within his own party. Came back, and so there have been negotiations. The so-called Freedom Caucus, the most radically conservative, I'm not sure that they're so conservative, they're not mainstream conservatives. That's a group of over two dozen members of the House of Representatives that refused to support the Paul Ryan's Act legislation, and they did so because they wanted to get rid of the subsidies in general, but they at least wanted to negotiate most of the main features that have been the most popular in the Affordable Care Act. That is, you can't charge or not offer insurance coverage to people with pre-existing conditions. You have to get rid of lifetime limits on coverage. You have to allow young adults up to the age of 26 to continue coverage under their family coverage, and so forth. All of those things were really prominent, but they want to basically deregulate the insurance industry and roll all those things back. And that would get rid of things like maternity benefits, mental health coverage, substance abuse, where, you know, we've got the opioid epidemic going on across the country, lots of other very valuable things, and basically get rid of what are called the essential health benefits that were developed under the Affordable Care Act. So we don't know that there won't be something coming back in some form. But right now, there's members of the Republican Party who don't want to sign on to anything that is clearly going to limit coverage and reduce the number of people with insurance coverage. On the other hand, the radical conservatives, the Freedom Caucus, doesn't want to give in either.
So if you were to start, and this is a hypothetical here, if, say, a bipartisan group in the Senate were to say, okay, we've got Obamacare, whether we like it or not, let's start working on ways to make it work better, what would you suggest as the starting points there?
Well, one of the key constituencies that has to be dealt with here is the insurance industry, because Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, made the choice to expand as much coverage through private insurance rather than through a public option or through allowing young, older adults but not yet ready for Medicare onto Medicare, or even further expansion of Medicaid. The private insurance industry has been asked to come in and offer plans through the state-based exchanges. And those are the ones that have gone through the turbulence over the last couple of years, because individuals, even though they're required to purchase insurance coverage if it's affordable, have not all done that. And so those rates have been in turbulence the last couple of years, and they're getting worse because people have the signal that maybe they shouldn't or don't have to get insurance. So I think you have to come in and help stabilize those private insurance markets that are about 10 million, 11 million folks right now receiving coverage. So that means actually doing a couple of things. It means being serious about, are we going to uphold this individual mandate or not, to get the younger, healthier folks to buy insurance and be in the pool and bring down the rates for everybody else? And will you protect insurers with so-called reinsurance, some highly technical things that basically protect them if their experience and the amount they have to spend on care for the people they're covering is much higher than they expected? Can they be protected and have limits on their losses? So those are two kinds of things that are very private market kinds of approaches to helping, you know, maintain that private insurance.
Tom, I want to jump in and ask that reinsurance idea. I think you've told me in the past that there was something like that, a stabilization fee or risk management support, I should say, that was supposed to be in the Affordable Care Act. It was, but it didn't get funded to the level that people had hoped, and that was part of the problem with the exchanges. Do I have that right?
That's right. There's three different kinds of help that were to help stabilize that were in the Affordable Care Act, but they depend on annual appropriations by the Congress. And of course, when Republicans gained majority control, they've been very skeptical about doing that. So the last few years, insurers are very clear that they would like those back as guarantees in exchange for playing in these pools. Yes.
We're talking to Tom Oliver right now, professor of population health sciences at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. He's with us to talk about what's next in healthcare policy and the future of the Affordable Care Act.
You can join the conversation. What do you think of our current healthcare system? What would you like to see change? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation now about the American Health Care Act, the House Republican health care bill, why it failed, and what's next for health care reform in the United States. Tom Oliver is with us. He's a professor of population health sciences at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health.
And we'd like to hear from you. What do you think should happen in the United States when it comes to health care reform? Were you surprised that the Republican health care replacement didn't work? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll go to our callers now. Forrest is with us in Door County. Forrest, hi.
Hey, how are you? I feel like I'm missing something here. Is the reason why the Affordable Care Act under Trump didn't go through was because people wanted, the Freedom Caucus wanted more extreme changes to it? Because I feel like the people are kind of confused about why it didn't pass.
Forrest, thanks. The American Health Care Act, and you were talking about the role of the Freedom Caucus earlier, Tom, but also people point toward Republicans, more moderate Republicans, who thought that the Republican bill went too far in some cases.
Yes. Well, so yes, the answer, Forrest, is yes. The Freedom Caucus essentially said, wait a minute, you're basically doing Obamacare light. You're offering lots of tax credits, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars over time to Americans. You're redoing that, but it's still government subsidies, number one, and you still have all these regulations on private insurance, and we don't believe in those, and we want those, out of the way. So, yes, they basically refused to compromise on those, and it got down to some things that looked pretty much like going back to the old days not very long ago when a lot of people could not even get insurance because even if it was offered, it would be prohibitively expensive if they were sick or older.
Forrest, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Fiona in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering that now that we've seen with the ACA that we gave the private insurers the opportunity to provide coverage to these marketplaces and we've seen all the issues that have come up with that, is this the time to introduce a public option?
Yeah, well, Bernie Sanders, Senator from Vermont, believes that, and that's exactly what's happened in this last week, sort of coming in on the chaos and all the people, Republicans and Democrats and independents, who showed up at the town hall meetings held by members of Congress in the last few weeks. He's come back with this so-called public option, that is a Medicare for all. That is, you know, something I think people took President Trump at his word. When they hear something like, you know, everybody will be covered and it'll be cheaper, they believe that. And they want to know why that's not going to happen and, in fact, go backwards. So I think, it's a very, very difficult situation where you can't get a Medicare for All plan passed right now. But depending what happens with this administration and Republicans facing midterm elections in just a year and a half or so, it may be something that gets on the agenda and picks up steam. And it's interesting because a lot of people who voted for Trump are, in fact, older. They have less work opportunities available to them. They're in more rural areas. And I think something like Medicare for All sounds probably pretty attractive to them, even though they might not be for higher taxes and a bigger role of government per se. Medicare is pretty popular, and that's why the president has stayed away from proposing Medicare cuts.
Fiona, thanks for that call. We'll go next to John on the line in Florence. John, hi.
Yeah, my kind of question comment is, when the Affordable Health Care Act took effect, my wife's premiums, the family premiums for a family of five, went from a little under $700 to $1,400, and our deductible went from $1,500 per person for the five of us to an $8,250 family premium. So we, in essence, are considered insured, but we can't afford to use our insurance. It never gets to being insured.
And John, can I ask, was your wife under an employer-based insurance?
A government agency insurance.
Government. Okay, thank you so much, John, for calling in. And Tom, we've heard this not just from John, but from other callers who, after the Affordable Care Act came into place, for some people, their insurance outlook got worse.
This is true, because there were, it would be necessary to know what that prior coverage was. If it was under a group-sponsored plan, it's not real clear to me how that kind of increase could happen. But if you came from an individual, self-employed, or just a individual private family plan where you are signing on all by yourself with an insurance company, that kind of change could happen if you then went into the exchange plans, because you might have had a good deal under individual insurance, but it also might not have had the essential health benefits. It might not have had some of the other protections around pre-existing conditions, lifetime limits, and those kinds of things. So there's no question that a number of people have looked at increasing bills, but by and large, the vast majority of people under the Affordable Care Act ended up better off, not worse off. And so there's a real balance, and I think the secret is, how do we try to deal with the individuals who ended up thousands of dollars worse off potentially if they do get sick? And that's where John's family deserves, I think, some attention from policymakers, just as the insurance companies who ended up losing money that they didn't expect to lose got some protection.
John, thanks for that call. We're talking to Tom Oliver from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, the Affordable Health Care Act, the Republican House effort that failed to come to a vote a week ago today, and what's next for health care in the United States. Back to your calls now with Floyd on the line in Mequon. Floyd, hi.
Hi. I have two questions. First of all, when the Republicans started saying they were going to get rid of Obamacare, the insurance companies started dropping out because they thought it was a losing proposition. So it's essentially become a self-fulfilling prophecy, number one. Number two, isn't it time for a single-payer option where the government does it? Nobody has really looked at what happens when people don't have insurance and they go to the emergency room. where their bills can be 50 or 100 times more than if they went to a doctor. Who's paying for that if they have no insurance?
Floyd, thanks for the call. So that, first of all, Tom, the idea of a self-fulfilling prophecy, Republicans with a bullseye on the Affordable Care Act, so insurance companies may be a little reluctant to stick around in these marketplaces.
Yes, I think they are reluctant, and some of the pullout might be construed to be sort of daring the government to help them make it economically or financially viable to stay in, and sort of I think somebody pointed out that some huge proportion of beneficiaries under the Affordable Care Act in Nebraska, you know, basically rely on a single company. So if you are that company, you have a pretty strong negotiating position potentially to stay in. I think the single payer issue needs to be floated as a legislative option, and I think, you know, in the future, this is the kind of thing that seniors who were tried to, you know, under both the Affordable Care Act and under the recent proposals, have kind of been left to the side, other than getting some prescription drug assistance under the Affordable Care Act. I think it's time to bring them into the conversation because they voted, you know, heavily for Trump, and yet they certainly didn't vote on the premise that Medicare was going to be undermined. And so I think the question that's brought up here is that if this is so good and so popular with seniors, how come not the rest of us? But that's something that's been with us for over 50 years since Medicare was adopted in 1965, when everybody presumed it would become the basis for national health insurance.
We'll leave it there for now, Tom. Thanks for joining us.
It's a complicated story, and I think the president acknowledged that. So thanks so much for having me, and I hope we made some headway.
That's Tom Oliver, professor of population health sciences at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. He joined us today to talk about the latest in health care reform and what's next after the failure of a House Republican plan.
I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.